T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
I mean, you guys are the best team in Chicago. Everybody knows that. We all know that. The afternoon show is not afraid of anything, really. Yeah. But
Afternoons on the Score.
You've been teammates with Kyle Hendricks for a long time. How hard is it for you to see him struggle? And in Sunday's game, it wasn't like he got bombed. He just seemed to just get peppered.
Yeah, and you see it all the time. You know, it's not specific to Kyle. You see it all the time. It's early in the season. It's a small sample. You know, there's times when guys get hit hard or give up walks, and then there's times when guys get blooped around the field. And I think J-Mo, you know, said it really well about his start last year. Like, it just, everything was going wrong. You know, there would be times when there was, you know, four bloopers in a row that led to a run, and, you know, a couple hard hit balls after a couple bloopers, and you end up in putting runs on the board and, you know, frustrated. And that's part of the game. You know, I think we as a organization, as players, you know, everybody has all the confidence in the world in Kyle Hendricks and his ability and what he can do. And there were some really bright spots that start on Sunday, and him on the edges and that cut changeup working against righties. And, you know, I've played with him long enough to know that he is one of the best in the game at what he does, his consistency, his preparation, and he's going to be just fine. It's just early going.
We need better results, frankly.
Well, now they've made a move. Real or imagined, Kyle Hendricks has been placed on the 15-day injured list with what they are calling a lower back injury. A bunch of other moves that we will get to in a second, smaller, though one somewhat significant for the show. But Matt Mervis and Hayden Wisneski and Luke Little have been recalled from AAA Iowa. Drew Smiley placed on the 15-day IL. And Garrett Cooper has been DFA'd.
And I always wonder, what happened to Gary Cooper, the strong, silent type?
That's a real disappointment for us.
For the show.
It's a real disappointment that we won't be able to play that anymore. It's unfortunate. He had a nice pick at first the other day. He had a nice play over there. On the Nico Webb gem, he was at first on the crazy play where he went to his right. But the big news here is obviously Hendricks. This is going to sound so weird. I hope he's hurt. It's been, you know what I mean? It's been so bad. Uh-huh. I hope he's hurt, but I don't believe that he's hurt. Because no one has said anything about him being hurt, but the phantom IL stint.
Nor would they likely have said it before now, right?
I mean, no, but you could have said it after the game against the Marlins.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. In the aftermath of it, they pulled him quick, understandably. Mm. I mean, he gave up 4 runs in 4 innings, and that home run was 460 feet.
It's quite an impressive feat of strength.
It was a nuclear missile. Uh-huh. Of a shot. Everything else, because that's the thing. Like, they're like, oh, there were bloops and bad luck. I'm like, yeah, there were, and there were in the Padres game too. But then there were home runs, and like, yeah, there was only one home run against the Marlins, but it went over the batter's eye.
I mean, you didn't see it as this sign of improvement.
Let's put it this way: if that's improvement, which technically it is, his ERA did lower after giving up 4 runs in 4 innings. It was like, okay. I mean, one ball
only gave up a run an inning.
Gave up a run an inning. Uh-huh. One ball went 460 feet, and he didn't.
It should have gone 420 on that date, though.
It would have been nice. Yeah. It would have been appropriate. Uh-huh. And it was, I mean, gave you 56 or 58 pitches. So it's not like he helped your bullpen. He didn't really. He gave up a bunch of runs. He gave up a missile. So I hope he's hurt. because then at least you'd have an explanation as opposed to like he's lost it but I also don't think that Kyle Hendricks can lose it because the guy throws 87 miles an hour. You know, like it's all about control and all of that. So like, and he's had good innings. He's had an 8-pitch inning where he saws off three guys for three weak ground balls and he looks exactly like Kyle Hendricks. But if he's got to be aggressive early in counts and throw fastballs and his fastball tops out at 89 miles an hour, guys are going to just hit the ball a long way.
Even if, you know, like the idea that Kyle Hendricks can't lose it necessarily, as he's pitched so many innings over the years and getting to the age that he's gotten to here, if the low back becomes some sort of a frequent issue, that's where, you know, it would still be concerning. Like if it's a real injury, then that could at least explain it. But if it's a real injury, and low backs can be very tricky, low backs can develop later in your career after you're just torquing your hips and your trunk over and over again over the years that he's been pitching. And, you know, you certainly wouldn't want this to be something that becomes an issue for him on a consistent basis either, because while his velocity has never been his strong suit, but you still, to be able to pitch with the control, with the precision that he does, you still have to be able to actually use, you know, your top and bottom limbs all have to work in unison. Your trunk is, and you've had back issues, your trunk is such a big part of every athletic movement that you make.
Me and Kyle Hendricks are one of the same.
I mean, you're built very similarly, so I mean, you know.
Both golf.
Right.
Both have back issues.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Get you some glasses or some contact lenses.
We both pitched on the mound at Wrigley.
Oh, good point. I forgot about that.
Yeah, a lot of similarities.
We should do a side-by-side image of your pitch and one of Kyle Hendricks' pitches.
About the same velocity. No, I can't throw that hard. I can't. So I assume Wisniewski will get the start Saturday. We'll see if Council announces it this early. My guess is he doesn't because they also, you know, might need him out of the pen earlier than that. So we'll see. But Wicks, Tyone, Assad, and Shota, the next locked-in four starters for the Cubs. But Kyle Hendricks will not be making that start against Boston, which it's good. This is good for all involved. It's painful to watch
for
him.
For now, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just saying, like, it's painful to watch him go out there and feel like he's an automatic loss, and they're too good to let that be the thing for one out of their five guys. And with no days off coming up here,
right.
You can't have a guy who's getting pulled and, you know, 14 batters into a game. Like you need someone to eat innings when you don't have a day off for 16 days.
There is a balance to trying to. When I was in for you, I guess it was week before last, I was asking Craig Counsell about this a little bit and trying to let Kyle Hendricks work through some of this in what's still very early in the season, because at whatever point, if he's able to become some version of Kyle Hendricks again, then obviously that's huge for your staff and will pay dividends once you get down the stretch of the season if there's a version of that that's still within him somewhere. But, yeah, I mean, 16 games and 17 days or whatever it is coming up, that could ask a lot of him. It could ask a lot of your staff and your bullpen if he's going to be out there not looking like that guy. I do feel like I heard you recently making the case, though, that you think it could make sense to bring him out of the pen at some point?
No, I think that I understand conventional wisdom suggests that his stuff does not play out of the pen because he's not the greatest like swing and miss guy. He's not the greatest velocity guy. Mm. But I also think that you happen to have hired a very unconventional manager who just looks at these guys as out-getters. And so is there a world in which Kyle Hendricks is on this team as a bulk reliever who pitches in blowouts? Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, who pitches in blowouts?
I don't think he's a seventh inning relief pitcher.
That's not really plausible, though. They wouldn't do that to Kyle Hendricks, would they?
Well, if the alternative is DFAing him and they're paying him money this year, you know, you need innings.
Yeah.
There are a lot of innings in a baseball season.
I guess in my mind it feels all or nothing with Kyle Hendricks to me. Like either he figures it out as a starter or he's not going to be around. That's what's in my head. I don't know if that makes as much sense.
No, my point is that conventional wisdom, we should ask things that are unconventional about them now because they're a smart, analytically forward organization with a really smart, stubborn manager who is going to always be pushing them to reconsider new things.
Yeah.
And so if he's like, wait a minute, this guy, and again, now they say he's not healthy.
Yeah, right.
But if he's like, wait a minute, he's healthy. Mm-hmm. He's just not good for us starting games.
Okay.
But I can go to him.
But you don't mean leverage innings.
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, well, right. No.
Because that's not any better than giving him innings at the start of a game if he's going right. to be bad in the middle
that's
of the game,
saying.
Too.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying I don't think they're going to DFA Kyle Hendricks. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's happening. I mean, maybe if it's 10 horrible starts or, you know, but I don't think that they're going to do that to the guy. I mean, the guy started game 7 of the World Series. He started game 6 of the NLCS.
At some point, they're going to have to, at whatever point he gets healthy, if he doesn't improve, they're going to have to stop trotting him out there on the mound too, though, right?
Yeah, as a starter. And then I think maybe it's mop-up duty as a reliever and, like, maybe another phantom injury and, like, get to the end of the year where you don't pick up the option and you say goodbye to Kyle Hendricks. But I have a hard time seeing them DFAing him in the middle of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Cubs legend. He's an icon. I'm not saying it's impossible.
Yeah, right. Like,
I'm not saying it's impossible. I don't think
we're down 12 runs in the seventh. Kyle, come do this like that. I feel like that's probably not something they're going to do to him either, though. Right? Like, that's just as embarrassing, if not more, than putting him on the street.
Maybe. I think we're a ways away from both of those things, though.
Yeah.
Because clearly we have. Now we have IL move.
Mm-hmm.
When he comes back, he'll come back as a starter.
Yeah.
Then he'll get a leash of a few starts. Oh, he's working his way back from injury. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it could be another phantom IL injury again. But if Steele and Tyone and Shota and Wicks and Assad, you know what I mean? Like, there might not be a spot for him if five guys start going well. Or it's like, or they might say, you know, we're going to do six-man rotation, which they've talked about every now and again to ease Shota's innings load in his first year in Major League Baseball. You know, like, I'm just saying, like, Craig is very creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we should not be totally close-minded to the only way Kyle Hendricks performs for the Chicago Cubs is a starter every fifth day, throwing cut changeups that saw off right-handed hitters and induce weak contact. Like, you know, I think they will explore every possible avenue to do right by him. But if he has an ERA of 12, it's going to end very, very poorly.
Right. Yeah. If he's just bad.
If he's just bad.
It's hard to do right by him when he's just bad.
Yeah. Exactly. So they'll give him another shot at some point. But there we go. They also have a lot of first basemen on the team. I don't want to, like, completely grind the whole roster right now, but. Yeah, Mervis back, and that's not sure where all those guys are going to fit in. We can get more into this as we go, but, like, I don't know how much you're staying up and watching NBA because you have the morning show and Big Ten and football, and you have 1,000 jobs. I love it. We don't talk a ton about the NBA in the regular season outside of the Bulls. We don't do a ton on the playoffs.
Yeah.
The opening weekend of the NBA playoffs was kind of a dud. There was a stat that was going around that in the first, like, six games, there were 20 lead changes, but then there were 19 lead changes in Thunder Pelicans, the last game on Sunday night, which was an awesomely random, weird game. But yesterday, oh, my God. And it's an endurance contest, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Like, staying up for, like, every night, there's a game that says it's going to tip off at 9 on ESPN or TNT, but it's probably tipping off at 9:20
because it's a doubleheader and the other game's going to run late.
Yeah. And it's like, all right, here we go. This game, there's going to be more reviews. There's going to be everything. It's like, all right, we're up. And now I want to see what Barkley says after the game.
Right.
So I'm up till midnight, three nights a week at least, watching NBA games. Sometimes I'm falling asleep. Sometimes I'm making it to the end. But last night was just one of those days in the NBA. Sixers-Knicks was real weird. And the end of that series has just been – it's the Garden, man. There's something about, like, the Madison – have you been to Madison Square Garden?
You know, I didn't hear the Tanny story yet, though. He's been there now, which I haven't
been. He went
to
Bulls-Knicks.
Yeah, it's definitely colored the way that I'm viewing the NBA playoffs here. Like,
okay.
You know, like, I'm in a tough spot because, obviously, being of a certain age, I grew up hating the Knicks, right? But once Tibbs took over, it kind of made me change the way I felt about them a little bit. They had Derek and Taj and Joe, and, like, now – going to the Garden a couple weeks ago, last weekend, and getting to experience that venue, it's an all-time great sports venue. And it was one of those, like, I went with my one of my best friends, big-time Knicks fan since forever. I was happy that they won that game. And you could just tell that the Knicks were a vibe out there. And they had never been more positive. I tuned into The Fan in New York the next morning to see what they were saying about the Knicks. And it was like, yeah, this is, we haven't felt this way since, like, 1994. You know what I mean? So I'm definitely watching the Knicks. It's kind of different than I ever have in my basketball watching life. And I'm happy for them. Can I even say that? But MSG was like, it definitely, watching that game last night and seeing that crowd at the Garden last night and following along on social media, it was definitely what you need to be watching. This series is going to be fun, you know, this Knicks-Sixers thing.
Yeah, I got to get out there at some point. I would imagine it from Syracuse. You made your way over there, right?
I've been. So, I mean, I've been to... I think I've been to two Knicks games in my life in the Garden, one when I was a real little kid. But I would go for the Big East tournament every year.
Okay.
When the Big East was not the heyday of the 30 for 30,
right,
but when it had expanded to the ballooning before conference expansion, like when it was 16 teams. And
when TCU was in the Big East.
Yeah,
that
right.
was like 2 weeks. But yeah,
right. Okay. But I mean, when you had, I mean, all of the legends were still coaching. So, I mean, Boeheim, Jim Calhoun, Rick Pitino's at Louisville, Bob Huggins is at West Virginia. You know what I mean? It was you'd go and cover the Big East tournament, and on a doubleheader,
Hall of Famers galore.
You'd have, you know, 3,500 coaching wins between the four teams that you were watching. And like the lower programs were Marquette. You know what I mean? Like big time basketball schools. Mm-hmm. So it was rocking. It was an awesome, awesome time. So I've been to a lot of basketball games, but mostly college at the Garden. But yeah, man, it's the NBA playoffs, it's just you get the college level crowds for pro style talent. Mm, yeah. So like Oklahoma City, the building rocks. Mm-hmm. The Garden, the building rocks. Like,
yeah.
When they go back to Philly, Joel Embiid, he's playing on one leg. He's getting no help. But he's like, after the game, he's like, we're winning this series. Philly is going to respond to that. Like, Philly will, that is going to be an intense, angry, like, there's, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of juice that you don't get as an NBA guy. The criticism of the regular season not mattering much and feeling, it's a completely different sport. Which sucks for me who wants to be like, hey, the regular season matters, or I want to go to a game, or I want to try to convince the audience to care about the thing that happens on a Tuesday. It's hard to do. The Milwaukee Bucks sent out a tweet that said, no one really cares what happens in 82 games. Now's all that matters. It's like, that's not great. For 82 games, no one really cares.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of truth to it.
The tweaks they've made, just like baseball's tried to make their tweaks, I do like the tweaks the NBA has made as far as just getting the play-in tournament, kind of expanding the postseason field a little bit, so you keep that much more engagement from certain fan bases and certain teams, and everyone's not trying to sell off their best talent. And so, you know, even though pretty much the entire regular season was very difficult to sort of slog through from a Bulls perspective, but then there were games of consequence in the postseason, even for the Bulls. And so league-wide, I think that's enhanced the regular season as much as they can plausibly enhance such a long regular season.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's one of 82 doesn't matter that much.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. Mm-hmm. One of 17 matters a ton.
Right.
It's just basic math.
Yeah.
So that's why none of these other sports in the regular season will ever do what football does to us. Mm-hmm. Because just by math, the games don't matter that much.
Yeah.
But it's really rewarding when you stay up late for one of these NBA playoff nights and you get an ending like you did to Nuggets Lakers. That game was insane. Either game could have gone, you know, the Lakers were in both games. LeBron played amazing. Anthony Davis played amazing. Jokic is just a complete freak of nature. And the game comes down to Jamal Murray.
A stop here, you win the game.
Here we go.
Three-pointer LeBron. Missed it. Rebound Porter. There's the stop. Over to Jamal Murray. They have to foul. They have to foul. He's at the midcourt circle. 4 seconds. 3 seconds left. Why are they not fouling? Jumper Murray. Got it to Hard. Denver bounce the comeback. They win game number 2. 101-99 is the final. And the Lakers can take that L on the way out.
Whew, I hadn't heard that. That is an awesome call. It was, I mean, it's like Jamal Murray against, I mean, Anthony Davis yesterday was, he was like talking to reporters. He's like, it's an outrage that I'm not a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. Mm. I'm the best defensive player in the NBA. Because they named three finalists, and it was Bam, Gobert, and Wembanyama. He's like, it's an outrage that I wasn't him. And when AD was on the bench, Jokic was cooking. Mm. Jokic still had a great game, but like, AD makes him work. Mm-hmm. And so the end of that game, it's Jamal Murray being guarded by a 7-foot giant, and he hits the shot like barely gets past his fingertips, now, and he nails it.
I am
incredible.
A little confused. Why was he yelling they have to foul? What is a tie game?
Yeah, he was off on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
I was confused by that. All right. I was trying to figure out if I misunderstood the moment.
He was off on that.
I mean, he was very excited.
Homer announcer losing his mind. Yeah,
he was very excited in the moment.
Homer announcer losing his mind.
Which can be fun. But it was a bit much.
Yeah, it was tie game. But
they have to foul. No,
please don't foul.
Do not put them on the free throw line right now. That would be bad for your squad.
Make Jamal Murray make a shot over a 7-footer with 9 feet
on
arms.
Away, off balance. Yeah, all net. He didn't even see the shot go in, he said, after the game.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't even see it go in. He's just laying in the arms of his teammates afterwards, as was Anthony Davis as well, because AD is leaning and leaping so hard, and he's off balance as well. He goes tumbling into the Nuggets bench also, and the plays went up for grabs.
It was so great.
And it's fun to see. I mean, you know, everybody has their LeBron opinion. It's fun to see, especially at his advanced age, just the stuff he can still accomplish.
Yeah, he's crazy.
On a basketball court, on each end.
It's completely
of the
insane.
Basketball court.
It's completely insane. It defies all logic. Mm-hmm. You have to tip your hat. I mean, you know what I mean? Whatever you're like, it's. There's no superlative left for how is he still one of the 10 best basketball players in the world at his age. And, I mean, they're a huge underdog. They're not going to win this series, but he's put it up a hell of an effort, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Jokic is the best player on the floor, and then it's LeBron. That's crazy.
Right.
Jamal Murray, Anthony Davis.
The three-time MVP is the best player on the court, and then the 39-year-old guy is the second best
player. It's crazy. Yeah. It's absolutely crazy what he's able to do. You also did something recently that I find a little crazy. I want to mine you for information because I could see this being my future. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
Hi, everybody, and a very pleasant evening to you wherever you may be. Down here, we would greet you by saying g'day, mate, and it is a good day or a good night either way.
All right, I know you've been back for a while. But you kind of did like a last minute trip to Australia. That's not a thing that many people do.
A lot of our travel tends to be last minute, but this is no exception.
And I assume that's because of just like your NFL royalty and you have like a lot of free travel miles from your work. I don't exactly understand how you pull that off. But congratulations on all of your success. But like, because we were talking about it, I was like, you're like, yeah, I'm going to take a vacation. And I was like, oh, cool, where are you going? And you're like, I don't know yet. And so I'm like, oh, okay, he's going to like book a last minute trip. He's going to go to Florida. Like, you know what I mean? And then I heard that you were going to Australia, like the farthest place you could possibly travel to. I'm like, okay, he's going to Australia last minute with a 6-year-old. For a couple of weeks.
My 6-year-old asked to go to Antarctica. We ruled that out. We said we are not going to Antarctica.
It's unbelievable.
That is not on the list of options.
My 4-year-old hasn't been to Wisconsin yet. Like your 6-year-old.
I like that exercise for consequences. I want to go to Australia. Boom, 18-hour flight. You said you wanted to go, kid. Now deal with it.
See how you handle this flight.
It's just an unbelievable thing to me. So, again, last minute trip to Australia, multiple weeks, great.
Uh-huh.
I very badly believe that, like, travel is the best form of education, and we absolutely will do it with the kids. Mm-hmm. I kind of don't love the idea of traveling that much, though, when they're not going to remember it, because it's like, it's just, traveling with kids is hard, and not just the airport and the plane, but just like everything is different and nothing is routine and safe. And so like, just like, I don't know, it's expensive. They're not going to remember it. And then it just ends up being more work for us.
A lot of factors.
Right. Yeah. So how do you do this?
Yeah, I mean, at six, he'll remember it. He won't remember it as well as a trip we take a decade from now, but he'll remember at six, the trip. And even at this point, you know, trips we've taken the last couple of years, they're things, you know, like he remembers, you know, seeing various animals in Costa Rica or in Hawaii or things like that.
Costa Rica and Hawaii. Now this is starting a well-traveled six-year-old.
Very much so. Like, he doesn't remember London because he was two. So he's seen pictures, but that one doesn't stand out in his memory. So we'll continue to travel. It'll continue to be a part of his DNA. But I very much agree with the premise of what you're talking about there. It's a great process to go through for young people, for old people, for everyone alike, just to kind of see the world. We want it to be a regular thing for them.
And I want it to be a regular thing for my kids too. And I want them to be good travelers.
Yeah, right.
And I assume Bishop, good traveler?
Yeah. I mean, he's normally an exceptional traveler.
That's great.
Even the flight we took going to Australia, where at one point, like in a 15-hour flight, there was a couple hours that were really hairy. For him, there's only like 5 to 7 minutes that were really rough where he woke up at one point, we went to the bathroom, came back, and his stomach, he got like a violent stomach ache that went on for a few minutes.
On
a flight to Australia. So for his two parents, it was very disconcerting.
I mean, that's concerning if an adult has a violent stomach ache on a flight to Australia.
Once I grabbed the vomit bag and he did what he needed to do, he was pretty immediately fine. But my wife and I were kind of up in arms about it. Now, you know, I'm trying to play it cool because my wife is freaking out. So I don't want to freak her out even more. We're talking to the staff on the plane, trying to get flight attendants. I put his medicine below the plane in the check bags just because we've never needed to give
amateur
him children's
move,
Motrin on a flight to Australia before. So I was like, yeah, we'll be fine. We'll need it when we get there, not on the flight. So eventually they make the announcement like, yeah, we got a sick kid. Is any doctor on the plane? Does anybody have medicine? I start working the row because not everyone on a flight to Australia speaks English. So I just start kind of working the rows. I spot people with kids. Hey, do you have Motrin, some version of it? Somebody had some children's Motrin. We thought maybe he had a fever. We gave him some Motrin. And, you know, pretty quickly after we used the barf bag, he was in good shape. But there was a couple hours there for us that were pretty, pretty hairy. He lost a tooth at 40,000 feet as well.
This is a big time adventure. We got vomit. We got tooth loss. We got 16-hour flights.
Quite an exciting moment. He got the tooth fairy visit once we got there. Got Australian cash.
Wow.
Once we got there from the tooth fairy. Yep.
Okay.
So he's got the Australian bills. And I think I was telling the guys this last time I was here. Just anecdotally. And, you know, our son's pointing it out, just seeing we saw a bunch of Bulls jerseys roaming around, you know, Michael Jordan jerseys all over the place. But out of any team, I saw no Cubs stuff, saw some Bears stuff, a bunch of Bulls stuff, saw a lot of Yankees gear and so much White Sox gear. And, you know, some of it, you know, the Liam Hendricks factor seemed to be a part of it. But I just stopped and talked. Like the first morning we were there, the barista serving us coffee at breakfast, huge White Sox fan, immediately dogging Jerry Reinsdorf. Just talking about how disappointed he is in everything the White Sox were doing already that early in the season. Bloody wretched, I think, is what he called him, or something along those lines.
Oh, wow.
The quote on Instagram at one point there. But saw a lot of Chicago team gear all around. All three spots we went to over 2 weeks plus in Australia, Chicago was well represented.
Is Australia worth it?
So we flew out there thinking it's going to be the one time we go. Let's live it up. Let's do it big. We'll probably never come back. By the time we were coming home, said, well, we need to do this again. Like, Australia was worth it. Now, we're not going to do it again with a six-year-old, but, you know, he probably won't be six the next time we go. So he'll be older by then.
That's how time works.
Yeah. In theory, we should be good in that regard.
What was so great about it? Because, I mean, I think it's on everybody's list, but it's so damn far.
It was not on my list for a long time. I was worried about scorpions and snakes and spiders. The only place I saw any of those things was at the zoo. We went to Melbourne. We went to Sydney. We went to Brisbane. We were in, you know, cities and beach communities. We weren't in the outback. You know, the scary stuff, the poisonous stuff is in zoos and outbacks.
Is the food good?
The food was very good. Asian cuisine there. So if you like Asian cuisine, there was a lot of those options. Shane, are you familiar with rump steak?
Of course I am.
I had never experienced rump steak, had never heard of it. So it wasn't the most tender meat, but it was tender enough.
It's like a sirloin.
But I like the flavor. Yes, like a sirloin. Yeah. But I like the flavor of it, though. It's not real fatty.
Was it cut in steaks, or did they braise it or cook it low and slow for a while and serve it to you over like potatoes?
We had it a couple of different ways. The way my wife said it was one of the top three steaks she ever had was they basically like they sliced it really thin and had it kind of rare, like medium rare, but it was really more rare. Than medium rare. It was more undercooked than I would have preferred, but she loved that. She said it was one of the top steaks she's ever had. I would have liked it to have been cooked a little bit more, but rump steak was one food experience that we really enjoyed. Toothfish. I don't know if you're a big fish guy. Yeah. I've never had toothfish before. I'd never even heard of it. An amazing fish steak. It was like first time I went to Hawaii and mahi-mahi, having that on the islands, and then I look for mahi-mahi everywhere we go now. It's not the same as having it there. On the islands, but naturally. It's just a good fish. Toothfish, I don't see it on the menu anywhere here, but now I'm going to start looking for it. But toothfish was exceptional. But overall, the cuisine, Pan-Asian cuisine, was a big thing there.
All right. Well, speaking of Shane and food, you have a big event coming up tomorrow night. We should let people know about. People can come out and support you.
Yeah, I'm doing another Whiskey Wednesday at Frontier, which is like Chicago between Ashland and Division. Good people over there, same people who own Ina May and Lottie's, Chef Brian Jupiter. We're doing a Whiskey Wednesday with Buffalo Trace cocktails and Bardstown whiskey cocktails. And then we're doing their barbecued lamb shank on my focaccia for sandwiches. And $1 from each sandwich goes to One Tail at a Time, where I adopted my most recent puppy. So if you guys want to come out tomorrow, specials start at 5 and go until 10. I should be there about 6:30. I'm going to leave right after the show. So would love to have everybody out there. Some cheap cocktails, raffles, free raffles. It'll be fun.
That's at Frontier tomorrow. I was at the first one. Will not be able to attend tomorrow. I apologize.
It's okay. But I don't know if I want to say his name because he's not locked in. But there's like a 92% chance that I will have Dave Wanstead with me tomorrow. Okay. If that entices people to go.
Wow.
Probably not until about 7, but Wani said he's coming.
You know, we kind of make fun of him for his culinary choices or lack thereof, but like, he's had everything you could possibly eat because he's a rich person in addition to everything else about him. But I would love to see the look on his face when that gator comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I missed my one chance at kangaroo, by the way. I wanted to try kangaroo while I was there.
You only had one chance?
It wasn't on the menu anywhere else. I was just assuming we would happen upon it again. There was one of the first spots we ate at. My wife saw it on the menu and I didn't. And she brought it up afterwards because she didn't want me to eat kangaroo. Her and our son were just kind of worked up about the idea of daddy eating kangaroo. I don't know why.
No.
I guess, I'm heartless and they're not or
if
something.
If it's on the menu.
But I'm thinking it's going to come up again. Never had another menu with kangaroo on it. So that was a missed opportunity.
So you got to go back.
Got to go back. It'll be worth it.
I got to say, you did kind of sound like you were thinking, in theory, Bishop will be older the next time you go back.
That's usually how time works, right?
Definitely will be older. Breaking news on the score. Right.
So we won't have to worry about traveling with a 6-year-old again. That's good to know.
Based on how you rock, it might be when he's 7. You might be like, I'm taking a couple of days off. We're going to Australia.
We like new places, and Australia was new to us.
Yeah, of course. It's new to damn
people
near.
Are so nice. Every phrase sounds like they're asking a question, even if it's a very definitive statement. It just sounds like they're asking a question because of the accent.
All right. Well, Anthony and I are going to talk about what's next for Caleb and the Bears coming up at 5:00. But you mentioned the global villain. There was something funny that was published in Cranes that I think needs to be discussed briefly. It's Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Spend some time with our friends Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel.
Yes.
Afternoons on the score.
Well, first of all, somebody at Cranes decided that he wanted to write you're looking at the Bears at the White Sox lease, has 6 or 7 years left to go, and the White Sox have some options, and they might move out of the city, they might move out of town, they might go to Nashville. That wasn't us. That was a guy at Cranes.
How did it get there? How are they so well-sourced within the White Sox?
That wasn't us.
I can't imagine.
Some guy at Cranes.
So people know I find this to be largely joyless, so this is not about the stadium realignment, but the most recent Cranes, how did they get it, story about the White Sox is like
Hey, we never said that we weren't going to put up any money. Of course, we're going to put up some money. You think we're not going to put up any money? We're going to put up some money. And it's like, you know, we don't know exactly how much, but a source close to Jerry Reinsdorf says, I'm like, man, how are they getting all this stuff in grants? It's going to be like $200 million, at least $200 million. And so this was like a, we're going to make them look good, kind of like, don't worry. It's not going to be all on you. It's going to be some on us. It's going to be mostly on you, but it's going to be somewhat on us. We're going to put up $200 million. So I'm reading the column, and I'm like, okay, this is just, it's just more of this natural posturing that I have to follow for my job, and it's just completely joyless and wake me when it's over. By the way, Mark Grody will be at the Bears joyless propaganda press conference tomorrow for the new stadium idea at the lakefront. But the end of the column, I know Mitch sent it out so that everyone who didn't have Crane subscriptions, you guys read the column? The end of the column, Reinsdorf earlier told Cranes the team's current home at Guaranteed Rate Field in Bridgeport has not worked out and it needs to move in order to be successful. Reinsdorf, 88, said he has no plans to sell the team, but indicated that his son might well do so after he dies unless the team has a long-term lease that would keep it in Chicago. That kind of read to me like the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, like, oh no, wait, please don't go. Like, he's basically saying, hey, we might sell the team.
Did you recently read that with Owen?
I haven't. No. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Right.
But I just wonder why
Willy Wonka on the brain there. Okay.
That scene all is right. Just. I always think it's like, oh no, what a threat! Yeah, right. Please don't go. Like, is he under the impression that like White Sox fans or people would be devastated if the White Sox were not owned by the Reinsdorfs anymore?
Oh no, no!
Like, I know he's saying that that's just an old. That's just replaying the same. Like, hey, if a Reinsdorf doesn't own it, the next person might move the White Sox out of Chicago. Like,
that's indicative of the threat, right?
I know, but like,
dude, he threatened it 11 years ago. He's been threatening to sell the team for the last decade.
It's like.
And he also has said that he wants to be around until 2033, so he's here for the 100th anniversary of the first All-Star game, which is at Comiskey. Make up your own damn mind, you old hag.
How old is he going to be in 2033?
That would be, he'd be 98 right. Or 97.
Go ahead,
depending
Jerry.
On when his birthday is.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't matter. Nobody celebrates it.
Oh! I was reading that. I'm like, I don't think that threat is landing. Exactly in the way.
Keep using this threat. Do what I think it means. What you think it means?
Yeah. I still do think that if Michael Reinsdorf sold the White Sox, Michael Reinsdorf and the other many, many minority owners, if they sold the White Sox to fill in the blank billionaire and that billionaire moved the team, yes, I think that would be something that would not be celebrated by the majority of White Sox fans, despite Dan and Lawrence and plenty of people saying that they would not be upset if the White Sox left. I still believe that
a lot of people would be upset if the White Sox left.
A lot of people would be upset if the White Sox losing a team is a unique kind of sports pick.
Right.
So I obviously do, but I don't think it is at all a guarantee.
I'm not as deeply invested as any of them. I'd be upset if the White Sox left.
Yeah, me too. But I think that if the Reinsdorf heir and the minority owners do sell the team, the heavy favorite would be that the buyer of the White Sox would keep them in Chicago.
Okay.
Heavy favorite.
Regardless of the venue they're playing at or any dealings with the city.
The new owner would want a new stadium. And it would be like, I don't think what Jerry is asking for of a new stadium is like unique to Jerry Reinsdorf. Like, whether it's rebuilding on the same site or on the 78 or like, that stadium is old. It's about time to upgrade. It happens. They messed it up the first time. But I just think that idea of like, it's not a guarantee that MLB is going to say that Chicago, the entirety of the market, goes to the Cubs. And it's not like the White Sox have been around for 30 years.
There's a 0% chance, by the way. I feel like I've said that on the show 25,000 times. Major League Baseball and its collection of owners will never let the White Sox leave Chicago. It will not happen.
I agree with you. I won't go 100% on it because the last time I went 100% or 0% on a White Sox thing, yeah, the world ended. And Tony La Russa was the manager of the White Sox. But
I think the new guy would come in and with the new family or the new person, whomever it is, it's like they're going to own the Chicago White Sox. How long have they been around? This is the 125th anniversary.
About 124 years too long, I'd say.
Right, but they've been the Chicago White Sox for 124 years.
For longer than anyone's been alive.
It's a charter franchise of the American League.
Yeah.
Not Jerry Ann.
They're going to be here 124 years. They're not moving.
So you don't feel like, you know, stadium deal is on the table in Nashville. And
no.
Chicago's just not budging. So let's go make that happen because Nashville is this burgeoning sports market that over the last few decades has really boomed.
I think Nashville might get a baseball team through expansion.
Okay.
I don't buy it.
You think Nashville gets a team even with all of the public transit and infrastructure bills that they continue to shoot down, the residents do? I don't think the city can handle it. City can't handle as many bachelorette parties as it has, let alone a baseball team.
Yeah,
can't handle Morgan Wallen on a roof, let alone a baseball team.
I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think
who Morgan Wallen is?
A country star who used the N-word one
big
time.
Big time racist country star. Yeah, right. Threw a chair off of Eric Church's new bar.
Okay. Yeah. Can I name a Morgan Wallen song? A single one? Absolutely not. Right. Can you?
No, I didn't know who that was.
Oh.
Okay.
Boom.
I was going to put us in the same boat because I feel like normally I'd get a music reference and
I got
you wouldn't.
It.
But yeah.
I got that one from Shane.
Okay.
You want to discuss developing quarterbacks, what they need to do next with Caleb, 2021 draft as a point of reference. Bears
the incorrect
fans.
Perspective that people have on the 2021 draft class.
All right. I'm down for that conversation. Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.